Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 25th, 2006. Today's session is entitled Real Family Values, presented by John DeGraff, number DEJ-2006-02. Let's listen in.
The Motherhood Manifesto film is actually the film version of a new book by the same title, written by a woman named Joan Blades, who's the co-founder of an organization that many of you may have heard of called MoveOn.org. I think probably some of you get their mailings and things. It's an organization now of about 3 million people trying to do some things, I think, maybe to change a few of the priorities in America today. But my conversation this evening is titled Real Family Values, and by that, I don't want to say that other values that I'm not talking about aren't real, but only that there has been some very important things about family values that we haven't paid a whole lot of attention to in our society over the past few years, while we have actually had such a storm of discussion and of talk about family values. It's an interesting thing, and this is from my perspective, and you may want to disagree, and I certainly encourage everybody to speak up, raise your hand, chime in, and so forth. But my view is that as a country, there's probably no country in the world that speaks more about family values, where there's more talk about we're for family values, we've got to have family values, and so forth. But there's also no, at least modern industrial country in the world that seems to does less to support families in many of the things that families really need. And that's some of what I'm going to be talking about. We've had a big, big change in family structure in the United States since I was a teenager. And this chart illustrates that, this little graphic. I don't know who drew the lighthouse, so I didn't want to erase the lighthouse. So we'll work around that. I'll probably let it. So that has a really good artwork. I'm not going to erase it unless you're here and say, go for it. But thank you, John. So what this little graph shows, anybody want to guess what these numbers are? This is 1960. This is 71%. In the year 2028%. Does anybody want to guess?
Women at home.
Women at home, right.
In 1990.
In 1960, American families, 71% of American families had at least one person at home. One parent at home. Today, pardon?
Working very hard.
Absolutely. So that roughly only about 29% of in those cases had two parents both in the workforce. Today, those figures are reversed.
So
and only about 28%. Yes.
So this is the percentage of two-parent families.
Well, no, it's the percentage that have a parent at home. So this also includes single-parent families, which have increased as well. So there's only 28% where there is a full-time parent at home to take care of the children, and that's been a big, big change. And so, what do you think that has meant for families? What has been, we know what's been gained in that, and I am not here to either say, families should have one person working, two people working. That's not my point at all. This is the way things are. We've probably certainly gained some things from that, and we probably lost some things from that. And the question is whether we can solve some of the things that we've lost without necessarily losing what we've gained. But what do you think has been lost in that 40-year period? What's tougher for families today?
Eating meals together.
Absolutely right. So meals is family meals is a big one.
Children raising themselves after school. Latchkey kids.
Latchkey kids. Okay. Let's just talk about the meals for one second. What we found, and now the figures I have are from 1970 to 2000, so slightly different period. is that about one third fewer American families regularly eat dinner together as a family, as was the case in 1970. What are some reasons why that matters?
Conversation.
Giving values.
Giving values to the kids.
Sense of belonging.
Sense of belonging, sense of community in the family.
Nutrition.
Good point, nutrition. Nutrition, yeah, we know that. I mean, we know that some of our kids won't eat what's good for them even when we're there, much less when we're not there. So yes, nutrition is another one. One other interesting fact is that the University of Michigan has conducted long-term studies about what the best predictors are that students will do well in college. And one of the most interesting things is that they found that the best single predictor, certainly not the only predictor, but the best single predictor of how well kids are going to do in college, it's not what school they went to or their scores or these kind of, or how much homework. It's actually whether they regularly ate dinner with their families. It's a long-term study that the University of Michigan has done and made that conclusion. So that's a valuable thing. What else have we lost with families, do you think? We have the situation of latchkey kids, and yes, there are now at last estimate about 14 million children who are home alone after school each day in the United States. Many of those children are certainly old enough to be home alone, so that's not to say that all those kids shouldn't be home alone. But there are a more interesting statistic, 40,000 American kids under the age of 5 home alone. So that does say something to us, I think. Yes?
Are you ready for another thing? How about less exercise?
Less exercise.
Or not allowed to go outside and play.
I don't know if it's a direct correlation from that or not. I'm not sure that it is, but it's certainly it is a fact that kids are getting less exercise. There may be other elements related to that.
I suspect something to do with being a consumer. You substitute gifts for spending time with your children, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, you lavish on them Nintendos and all of those things.
Maybe, but I want to hold off on that for a second because I want to get to how much time people spend with their children. This is sort of an interesting fact, and there's some misinformation out there, I think, about that, and I'll get to that next. But let's talk about that now. There have been a number of suggestions that parents today spend less time with their children. Some suggestions even figures that I at one time point used, saying that parents spend something like 40% less time with kids today than they did a generation ago or 40 years ago. I think the data shows that that's not true. The time diary studies and things that have been done about this actually show that parents spend about the same amount of time. In fact, parents really care about their kids. And their time is much more pressured, but they don't take it away from their kids. They take it away often from themselves. They take it away from time alone, time to do things that they may want to do, but they're not really taking it away from their kids. But parents are still spending a lot of time with their kids. Now, the time they spend, though, the studies show, is somewhat different use of the time than it was 40 years ago. So what might be different between how parents are spending time with kids today compared to then? Yes?
It's very structured.
Structure? In what sense?
Taking kids to soccer practice and, here and there, the children's schedules.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, how kids are much more scheduled today. We know that. And parents do spend more of that time with kids today. Less of that time is spent in things like family dinner, in kind of casual conversation, and playing games with, and more of that time is spent being both often a chauffeur for kids and also a spectator in the various activities that their kids are involved in. So we still spend the time, but the quality of that time is somewhat different.
And helping them with homework.
And helping, well, then they do have more homework.
Yeah.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are some differences in that, and we can argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, how much of a good thing, but that is a difference. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the statistics play out at all. If both parents are now more involved with the children, there used to be a dominant parent more involved with the child, but now with having to, you know, work out the schedules and there is some quality one-on-one time while you're chauffeuring because they're not distracted. So there, I think there's some
positives. The news is not all bad. And one thing I don't want to do is have the idea that everything is in decline. And I think there is more. Dads do participate more than they used to. I mean, they don't participate as much as moms. There's no question about that. But they do participate more than they used to.
John?
Yes.
I've seen it just in passing, looking in cars and things and seeing everybody going together, but they're all on their own wavelength. Somebody on an iPod, somebody on a laptop, and somebody on a PC.
That is also something that's going on. You know, there is these electronic, that the whole those kind of things. So, yeah, it's complicated. And what's one other thing? I mean, what are you, most of you, doing with your children right now? Pardon?
TV vacations.
You're on vacation. You're on vacation. Big change. About the same number of fewer people who regularly have dinner together are taking any kinds of extended vacations together with their children today. Much less of this family vacation time spent together, and we know that that actually has a fairly important bonding effect for kids, and kids often remember that very much about that time spent in vacation. And vacations in general are less. Some of the studies, the conference board, which is, represents major corporations around the country, did a study this year that just came out about a month ago, and I was called about this by the New York Times, just for, you know, well, what do you think about this? And I tell you, because I'm the national coordinator of a group called Take Back Your Time, and I hadn't heard the study was out, and so the reporter told me the study and wanted to know whether I was surprised. And I had to say, yeah, I was shocked. The study found out that only 39% of American families this year will take 1 week vacation in a block. Wow. Only 61% of American families will not even take 1 week off as a block to take vacation this summer. Now, I thought it was bad, but I didn't think it was that bad, believe me. If somebody had told me the other way and said, well, do you realize that 40% of American families won't take a week off this summer? I would have said, yeah, that sounds about right. But this was not a study done by, this was the conference board that put this particular study out. Expedia.com has done many of these studies, and they're finding, you know, each year sort of a fewer people actually taking their allotted vacation time. Many of us don't. Unfortunately, we have about 25% of paid American workers that don't get paid vacation time. I mean, workers that don't get paid vacation time, and that's quite high. It reaches as high as 37%, one study showed, for women who earn under $40,000 a year. 37% don't get paid vacation, which is sort of a shocking thing. When I get calls each summer from other countries. And I got a call last summer from a radio station in the Netherlands. And they wanted to know about, you know, how is it that Americans get so little vacation, and why don't they get all upset about it? And, you know, is it really true that Americans only average 2 weeks vacation? Some of those things. And we had a conversation about that. And then the conversation went a little further. And I don't know how we got on the subject. But somehow, I can't remember that, but I remember that the subject at one point turned to the question of paid maternity leave, paid childbirth leave, for either parent, but for the mother at least. And somebody pointed out that there was no mandated guarantee, legal guarantee in the United States of any paid maternity leave. We have the Family and Medical Leave Act, which was passed in 1993, and it gives 12 weeks of unpaid leave to anybody who works in a company that has over 50 employees. So that's the law that we have. I think it's a good law. They're actually trying to weaken that law, I mean, almost as we speak. But nonetheless, that's what we have. And the Dutch reporter sort of said, so you're kidding me, right? And I said, so you mean to tell me that Americans have no right to paid maternity leave? They don't get paid maternity leave. I said, well, many of them get it. Many of them in their contracts do get it from their companies. About a third of women get it through contracts with their companies, maybe a little less than that. But everybody? No, not at all. There is no law that says you should have paid maternity leave. And the Dutch reporter said, she says, wow, she said, that's even more uncivilized than not getting vacation. And, well, okay. So,
get is a difficult word.
All right.
Because the way you're saying get is, in Europe, it's mandated.
Yes.
So the law is every employer has to give everybody 4 weeks off of paid vacation.
Right.
So what happens to the pay per week? It goes down by 1/12. Because they're getting 1/12 of the work. And they're paying for their vacation. Right?
Well, actually, they get paid in many countries for their vacation.
So if you're working at a job where you're going to get vacation, and they're going to pay you during that time, right? I used to be on a 12-month salary. Now I'm on a 10-month salary. And guess what? I'm getting 2/12 more than I used to get per month, but I'm getting the same total. Okay? Because my pay has been rescheduled. So there's a trade-off by saying get, which is mandated. So everybody, when the government says everybody's going to get 4 weeks of paid vacation, right? Then that's something that says everybody gets it. So in America, people get paid vacation and they negotiate. It's not 100%.
No.
Right? And there's some trade-offs there.
Ah, but wait a minute. The fact is that in every one of those countries, the minimum wage is also higher than it is here.
That's fine.
So the people at the bottom are not only getting a higher minimum wage, they're also getting on top of that 4 weeks of paid vacation.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I mean, but it must be the case that if your employer is mandated to give you 4 weeks of vacation, right?
Right.
That they're compensating for that and what they pay you for the weeks you do work.
Right. Yes, but that's a system that they
have. Wait. Then you can't say that people in America don't get paid vacation.
Well, they don't.
I get paid vacation.
You do, but
lots of people do. But it's not what?
But our poor
is not mandated.
Our poor
word is not yet. The word is mandated.
Okay, mandated. I'm fine with the word mandated. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
No.
But that's a problem.
No, right. I don't have a problem.
That's
with that. What I'm saying is that who's least likely to get paid vacation in this country?
The poor.
The people who are also least likely to make the money.
That's
right. So in those places, at least, you know, they have the minimum wage is higher, the gap is lower, there's less poverty, and on top of that, they do get a right to also have a life.
Did she say, the reporter, I just assumed it was a woman.
It was a woman.
Okay. Did she say anything about their maternity time off for their children in their country?
In Holland?
Mm-hmm. Because I know some countries, they have, they take a year, two years, and they're supplemented for that.
Right, and it's different in different countries.
Yeah.
And Holland is not one of the countries that has the highest amount of paid maternity leave. I think in Holland,
we definitely don't have that.
I think Holland, in the Netherlands, you get a full salary for 4 months.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's the law there. Now, in some countries, it's longer than that.
Right.
One of the things that most Americans don't know is that Canadians, you know, right next door, get 12 months of paid family leave that either parent can take, and they get that, if they want to take that, they get 55% of their salary covered during that period. In the province of Quebec, they get 70% of their salary covered. That's in Canada. So, you know, you don't have to do it, but you do have that opportunity if you want to choose it. You do give up 45% of your salary, but you do have that opportunity to stay home without losing your job and still having a portion of your income supported.
John, it seems like here they also try to word it as a disability or a illness, which is really backwards.
That is done, and there are about five states in which parents can get, mothers get 6 weeks off with pay automatically with childbirth, and it is called disability leave.
Yeah.
There's only five states that do that. And there's only one state in the United States that actually guarantees, that gives real paid parental leave. Does anybody know what state that is?
Hawaii?
No. Just happened a couple of years ago. So you get 6 weeks of actual paid parental leave, and both parents can take that leave, and you get 55% of your salary.
Massachusetts?
No.
Minnesota.
No.
Colorado.
No.
Minnesota?
No. Somebody said it.
Alaska?
No.
Utah?
No.
Vermont?
Think of the biggest
California.
California. That's a lot. Now, Massachusetts is on the verge of outdoing California. So, and actually passing a three-month law. That's probably going to happen. In Washington State, we tried very hard, I might say, to get a five-week paid parental leave law passed at a flat fee of $250 a week that the parent would get. So total cost of only $1,250. Absolutely no cost to business because the whole thing would be financed out of a two cent per hour addition to the payroll tax of the workers, completely funded by workers. Workers supported this, and we couldn't get this law passed, not to get 5 weeks of paid family leave. And it's it's really when you look at the rest of the world, it's pretty amazing. One of the things that is most shocking about this, and I'm kind of rambling a little here, so I hope you'll be with me. I had a little more of an organization plan, but I've gotten slightly off track, so I'll try to get back on track. But I will state this fact. Does anybody want to guess what the only countries in the world are? The only countries in the world, how many countries in the world and what they are that do not mandate at least some kind of paid maternity leave? We are one. How many others do you think there are in the whole world? Pardon?
Six.
Russia.
Somebody said six. Any other guesses?
No.
Three.
Who said three?
Me.
Three is correct. Anyone want to guess what those countries are?
Saudi Arabia.
No, Saudi Arabia has paid family leave. No, Iran has paid family leave. Cuba has quite generous paid family leave. No, they are, I'll tell you, because we'll try to move things ahead a little bit here. They are Lesotho, Swaziland, two of the homelands within South Africa, formerly homelands within the country of South Africa, and the third is Papua New Guinea. Those are the only other countries in the entire world that do not mandate at least some kind of paid maternity leave for moms when they have a child. Now, when I read that, I don't know about you, but I was a little bit shocked. You know, I found that my pride as an American was a bit taken aback by that. Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems to me that in a lot of these countries in the rest of the world, they're not, it's all very well pass a law, but by God, I kind of doubt they're getting any money in places where they're dying thousands in civil wars. It's, well, you know, whether they have the law or they're not, you know, I'd much rather live here without that benefit and earn a much better wage, you know, and maybe not be proud that I have that law. I wish we did, but
yes, but
the condition,
it's not fair to compare the best of what we have to the worst situations in the world.
this is the whole world, not just the worst places in the world, but...
Yeah, I mean, most countries in the world are not in the middle of civil wars and conflicts and things like that. People are, you know, and certainly in the rest of the industrial world, people are living pretty comfortably, and they have, and why does it matter? Why do you think having, because I'll tell you it does. I mean, there's lots of scientific evidence out there. This isn't just sort of an economic debate about, you know, profit and loss. There's some scientific evidence. Why do you think it matters to have paid maternity leave?
Bonding.
Bonding.
Well, it says something yes. about what people, what the country values. You know, it really says a lot about what they value.
It does, but does it have an intrinsic importance in any way that we can measure?
Well, people work better if they're not worried about other things.
Mm-hmm. Well, they work.
If they were
taking
infants to daycare, they might not be thinking about the job.
We could say that it might add to productivity, it might detract, but that probably could be argued both directions. But what do we know about
nutrition for the baby?
Nutrition for the baby. We know a lot of things. We know that when we know that infant and child mortality is much, much higher when there is no maternity. We know that kids have more trouble later because of the lack of bonding. They have more trouble in educational, in how well they do educationally. We know this from plenty of the statistical evidence out there. The scientists will tell you is pretty overwhelming about this. It does make an important big difference to have parents at home at least during the first 3 months of a child's life. Mm-hmm.
I talked with Raleigh Martinson, who's a professor at Luther Seminary, and he has spent a lot of time in Africa, and I think it was Zimbabwe. And he was noting in this village that when a woman was pregnant, all the women who didn't have children at home anymore would take care of all that woman's older children. And they took care of them until the child that she had was 4 or 5 years old. And he started asking the women, and they had no idea. He finally found the older women of the village, and he said, "Why do you do this?" And they said, "Because we know that if the women go down, we do not want the women to go down. If the women go down, the children go down. If the children go down, the village goes down, and we die."
Well, we do have evidence that it actually costs us as a society not to do this. We have evidence that we pay more later in various other kinds of costs. In costs of lack of educational achievement, in costs of health, of children who are not as healthy, and in terms of other socialization, things that come from lack of bonding, and in terms of delinquency. We pay the cost. It's like the Midas guy says, you can pay me now, or you can pay me later. We as a country have decided we're not going to pay now. And we pay, all of us pay. When we don't do this, then all of us in some ways pay the larger costs of having to take care of the problems that arise from this. And the numbers are pretty conclusive about this. In the film, you'll hear some of the doctors talk about this and what they see. Yes?
When Brian asked about the compensating differential.
Yeah.
And the question about, well, you know, the best in America versus the worst. You said, well, this is not most places. But in fact, really, if we're using the industrial world as a comparison, we're talking about a relatively small part of the world. Mm-hmm. And most of the world, infant mortality is much higher.
In most of the world,
right?
It is.
And so when we say most, we count the number of countries or the number of people. And especially if we count the number of people, we're talking about a huge chunk of humanity, which things really are far worse.
This is true. I'm not here to say that there aren't worse places. I'm here to say that given this country's wealth as a society...
Wait. I'm in complete agreement with that. I wish we had maternal leave. And when my, you know, when my kids were born, my wife took 6 months off both times, okay? But the question here is about the reality of maternity leave in many of these places in which the laws for anything are not enforced.
Yes, right? It's...
And there is a legitimate question about that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so in places where they can't enforce any laws, say if there's a law about maternity leave.
Do you think in those places the women are working
women's labor force participation is much lower in the developed.
So maybe we should take an advance and maybe do something for that. They've already made the initiative, and yet they're not even in the workforce.
Brian's question is a seriously important one about laws on the book. This gets back to laws and practice. What we do.
No, let's get back to family values. Yeah.
But yeah. This, no, wait. Yes, but this is. I'll accept that. But I have been to plenty of. I've been to certainly to developing countries. I mean, you know, Brazil is not a rich country, and yet people get this in Brazil. You know. And they get 4 weeks. They get 4 weeks vacation. They get paid maternity leave. It does happen. And the Brazilians that I talk to will tell you, yes, I got this. And I showed the film, and there was a professor from India who saw the film and said, I am absolutely shocked. We take some of these things for granted in India. You know, we do get maternity leave. Now it's true that in a country where civil war is going on, and stuff, that's a different story. But do we really want to compare ourselves in our situation with our ability to take care of children and to do well by our children with Rwanda? I mean, I don't think so.
My point was you just did in your comparison of statistics. That's all. You know, well, let's move on.
So who's deciding that?
I don't think I did that at all. But
who's deciding that we don't want a maternity leave? I know it's America, but is it business or is it, I mean, isn't it like a discrimination that that a company would not want to hire somebody in their childbearing years because it would cost them money?
There is a good part. And now how we finance this is another story.
Right.
And I'm not averse. I don't necessarily believe that all the burden for these kinds of things should fall on business. That is a whole different issue. I don't believe, for example, that all the healthcare benefits, that burden should fall on business. I think it's one of the things that makes our businesses less competitive. So that's a different question. The question, though, is as a society, what are we doing compared to the rest of the world? And in this particular case, it's not even just compared to the rich countries in the world. It's compared to all kinds of countries. And sure, we can find a few that probably aren't living up to their laws, but nonetheless, I don't think that takes away from the point, which is that the U.S. is woefully behind in some areas that have huge impact on our children and on our families and on family values. I think that's the point that I want to make here. So, what gets lost in again all of this in terms of our families. What do you think is it just work or are there other things that are making family life feel for many people pretty stressed and pressed? Because I don't think it's just working hours. That's not it. But there are other kinds of things that have happened in our society as well. What are some of the things in your life that maybe make life feel stressful?
Healthcare and insurance.
Maybe the lack of security is certainly one for people.
Aging parents,
so we're having to also take care of people at the other end of life, so there we do have that.
The high cost of living, housing.
Housing going up rapidly, healthcare, all of those kinds of things. So people definitely feel like they really need to work. But
expectations for high consumption.
Expectations for, okay.
Digital disconnect.
Now some people, what else do we
have?
Church, other time.
They kind of get, we need to do those, but they feel like, you know, that's another commitment. So we have a whole lot of commitments that we're trying to deal with. Commuting now, yeah, we do have an increase in total time spent commuting.
High expectations for your children.
High expectations, because it is a very competitive world out there, and you really want your kids to succeed in order to make it to the right colleges and things. So that there's more pressure in all of those areas right now. That's true. Now, some people will point out, and fairly, and I think this needs to be acknowledged, some people will point out that there's also a remarkable amount of time that we spend watching television and doing things like that, you know, that it is not, you know, there's time that maybe we could spend in something else that we spend watching television. But it is, in fact, a sort of an interesting phenomenon that television viewing correlates rather regularly, at least among industrial countries, with how much we work. So what do you think? Do you think that countries where people work more would watch more TV or less TV?
More.
How many people say they'd watch more TV? And how many people say they'd watch less TV? Okay, why would you say they'd watch less TV?
Well, you'd think that they would really cherish the hours that they had when they weren't working, and they would want to do something, you know, valuable during that time, like spend family time, so they would choose to watch less TV. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what I would think that the thought process would be.
And how about the other side? If you think they'd watch more, why do you think they'd watch more?
You're too tired to do anything else.
So you come home and you're tired and you say, well, watching TV is an easy way of socializing, you know, being with your family if you're watching the same thing, but it's a lot less energy consumption.
Do any of you experience that? I mean, I know I experience it. I don't watch much TV, but I watch more if I'm exhausted. TV's a pretty good deal. I mean, it is. It's this sort of easy entertainment, and you can just press buttons, and this will be done for you. And the couch potato is a kind of a welcome thing when you got so many. When you're working long and you're working faster, and we are working faster. That's part of what increase in productivity is. And when the pressures and the demands, and some of the demands are even in some of the good things in our life. And I don't want to decry choice, because I think choice is a good thing. But even a lot of psychologists now studying choice say that we can have so much choice that it becomes very stressful on us. So many different products to choose from. Now 40,000 items in the average supermarket, all of these kind of things. And there's always this sort of, did I make the right choice? I know this, like, you get all that, the phone plans. You used to have one phone plan. Now you can choose, do I want, you know, 200 minutes at $29.99 or 300 minutes at $39.99, et cetera, et cetera. And you have all the other plans and things. It's good in a sense, because you do get choice and it probably holds prices down, no question. But it also has that other side that it is stressful. And there is the sense, did I make the right choice? And one of the things also is we find that carries over from things into relationships. There's always there's something better out there. You know, this is what we expect. And it does make us feel a little bit stressed, and the fact is we do watch more television when we work. The highest TV viewing among industrial countries is in the United States and Japan, which also work the longest hours. The lowest TV viewing in the industrial world is in Norway and the Netherlands, which work the shortest hours of any industrial countries. And there's a fairly even correlation right on up between annual hours worked and amount of time watching TV. And what do people do who aren't watching the TV and in those countries? Well, actually, the time diary studies that are done about this show that, for example, in places like Norway and the Netherlands, they spend a lot more time socializing. They spend a lot more time with friends and family. And we find that that's good for it. It does some good things. I had a state senator from Wenatchee, Washington. I know there's people here from Wenatchee, Washington. Very conservative Republican state senator, wonderful woman named Linda Evans. She heard me give a talk once on affluence and invited me to Olympia, to her office, to talk with her about various issues. And I think she's terrific. I think she thinks I'm fine too, but we don't agree about hardly anything. But nonetheless, Linda is a dear person. But I came down and I met with Linda in her office, and one thing Linda said was. And she voted, by the way, against the maternity leave bill and all
those kind of things. But one of the things she said to me was, she said, well, you know, John, I think you're right about a lot of that stuff about time and work hours and things. She said, you know, the reason I think so is that my family and I took a vacation to visit our relatives in Norway last summer. And she said, you know what? She said, I have to admit, it was kind of just like you said, that people kind of came home at 5, and there was lots of time at dinner, and people got out, people walked and biked and spent a lot of time with their family in the woods and doing, you know, natural. She said it was such a calming thing, and it was a fun thing. And she said, I never thought I'd hear this from a Republican, but she looked me right in the eye almost gleefully, and she said, and you know what was the best thing about it? And I said, no, what was that, Linda? And she said, everybody wasn't trying to get filthy rich. I thought, wow, this is an interesting comment. But, of course, what do we do about it? I don't know. I mean, Linda obviously doesn't agree with me about what we do about it.
So it has the highest per capita income in the world.
It does now, yeah. But that there's that sudden oil boost. But you find the same thing. You find the same. The Netherlands doesn't have the highest. I mean, these kinds of things are true, and American tourists who go there see this in many places in Western Europe. So, yeah, but you're right. Norway does have the highest per capita income in the world. That's not.
No. That's just for the.
That's not necessarily shown in consumption tax right now. Okay. Okay. So I'm gonna just show you a tiny bit from the film, right? Well, I don't know. Should I do that or do?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Unless.
Okay. We'll show a little of that, and then we'll get into the more of this. Because the one thing I wanted to talk about is what I think is an interesting policy that would give Americans some choice about these things. But that's. Turn the lights off, I guess.
There's lights on the underneath. Can you turn them off?
Dramatic shifts our society has seen. 2/3 of all moms also work outside the home. This changed world can be a time of great opportunity for all Americans to earn a better living, support your family, and have a rewarding career. And government must take your side.
My job and working out, I can hardly breathe.
Well, I'm honored you look 2 months ahead of your PDA to fit me in. Anyway, I have some big news.
I am so happy for you.
You got a raise. New car. You're going to Maui. I've been trying to tell you that Tom...
I knew it! That is awesome! Where are you staying?
I loved it there. The water is so warm.
Oh,
it's
worth the hat.
Credit! Tom and I think it's time to start a family. Stop. Are you clueless? Don't you read anything? You're no genius, but you're not that smart either. You are teasing me, right? I wish. Well, don't you want to be a mother? Don't you know what happens to mothers in America?
It's the Bev Betters Show!
Hello, ladies. I'm Beverly Betters, but call me Bev. See, every day I meet another struggling mother, and they ask me, how do you do it? Pull yourself up from nothing, raising those perfect kids. You run a business, stay fit, and oh, that garden. Well, moms, you can do it too with the help of my new series called Mom Matters. Ready to be a better mother? Stay tuned.
Seven people make a big wash, but it's got to be done every week. You can't leave your men folks dirty. They might get used to it.
There's been a revolution in American life over the past half century.
That's the old way, the hard way.
It's not exactly what the experts predicted.
This is the kitchen of tomorrow, a press button dream coming true for Mrs. Housewife. A wave of the hand and presto, down comes a hidden cabinet with the dishes. Mama will feel like a fairy princess with a magic wand in a place like this.
Mom can only wonder what happened to such promises. Families feel the pressure to work harder, not work less. In 1960, 70% of all families had a breadwinner who went to work every day and a homemaker who stayed home and took care of the children or an elderly parent or a sick relative. That has completely changed. It's reversed. Today, 70% of families are what I call juggler families. Together, parents spend 500 hours more at work each year than a generation ago on top of household duties. This has put a terrible strain on families. Women are the ones who pay the biggest price. Even most single moms also work outside the home.
We did a study in 2005 of 2,000 mothers. Mothers want to work, there's no question about that. But they want to work in ways that enable them to have time. Time for themselves, time for their families, time for their children, time for personal and family relationships, time for life.
We want to feel the sunshine and we want to smell the flowers. We are sure that God is with us and we mean to have it ours.
As millions of Americans entered the factories, often working in terrible conditions, they looked for help.
8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest.
And government responded with new guarantees. The right to organize, the 40-hour week, and overtime pay, unemployment insurance, and Social Security. Each new policy made America more prosperous and more fair. As early as the 1920s, the Department of Labor advocated gender equality. But for working mothers, fairness was a broken promise. Today, women without children earn 90% of what men do. Yet for mothers, that number drops to 73%, and for single moms, to about 60%. A college graduate who becomes a mother can expect to forfeit nearly $1 million during her working life.
The film I just mentioned goes into everything from maternity leave to sick leave, which is a big issue in our country. We find actually in the United States today that only about half of all workers get paid sick leave as part of their employment. This also makes us very unique, certainly unique in the industrial world, and about 150 countries in the world do guarantee sick leave. Why does that matter? I mean, why do you think it might be useful for us to do paid sick leave? What happens when we don't do that?
I go to work sick.
People go to work sick. They have a word for that in Europe. They call it, they talk about the Americans and they say, you guys have the problem of not absenteeism, you have the problem of presenteeism. And you go to work sick and you get everybody else sick. People stay sick longer, they tax the medical system more, they're less productive when they're sick, and there's a lot of negative impact to that. But, we don't have any rules about that. And so we talk about that, we talk about flexible work and flexible time, we talk about childcare, compare the situation here, healthcare for kids, and finally we talk about living wages. And the number of people who are truly poor, particularly mothers with children in the United States. And we try to do it in a somewhat lighthearted way, as you can see. I think if you watch the film tonight, you'll enjoy Bev Vetters and her tips about how to be a better mother. She'll tell you how to do it. But one of the things that, just very quickly, that I think I want to tell you about one law that I think could do an immense amount to give all of us at least a choice of really choosing to work less, earn less as well, but work less and not lose our jobs, and have the opportunity to attend more to our families and to the other things that matter to us. In 1996, the European Union passed a law called the Part-Time Parity Act, which guarantees that part-time workers should receive the same rate of pay, not the same amount because they're working fewer hours, but the same rate of pay as full-time workers who are doing the same kind of work. So this is policy in the EU countries today as of 1996. In the year 2000, the Netherlands passed a law called the Work Time Adjustment Act. And what the Work Time Adjustment Act does is it says that you as a worker have the right to go to your employer and say, I would like to work fewer hours, and I am willing to take less pay because I'm working fewer hours, but I keep my hourly salary. My benefits are prorated, so if I have vacation time, that time is prorated. And because health care is universal, I keep health care, because in other countries that's the case. That single law, which an employer can say, well, if an employer can show that this will cause some real hardship for the firm, they can turn down this request. But the request is only being turned down in about 3 or 4% of the cases. So about 96-97% of Dutch workers who ask to go to part-time are granted this request. And it has allowed the Netherlands to become a real leader in terms of a society choosing time over consumerism. And it has spread to Germany, where it is also the law. There's a lot of talk about this law being the law throughout the European Union sometime soon. A less strong version of it is now in the UK, and it's called the Right to Request Act in the UK. It doesn't require employers to go along with the request, but it says that you absolutely have the right to request this without changing to your status, because many workers in the U.S. are actually afraid to talk about or even to negotiate some kind of change in working hours, even if they would like to. So that's just one of I think many creative ideas that are out there in other countries that we could learn a lot from if, as a society, we weren't so insular. And we could learn, really, a lot about things that would help us
raise our families in ways that are easier and that work for all of us. And I think we just need to do that. I mean, as a country, we just seem to not want to. We seem to think we have all the ideas, and there's nothing to learn out there. But it's quite amazing what is going on, and in these other countries. One thing I want to say, and we're just about down here now, is if you're interested in some of these things, and particularly if you're interested in time and finding more time and finding time for your family and thinking about these kind of issues, one of the places I suggest you go is to the website of the Massachusetts Council of Churches, which is just masscouncilofchurches.org. And they have joined the Take Back Your Time national campaign, and they have put out all kinds of wonderful stuff with great biblical references and so forth, but all kinds of tips for churches. They have a program called the Four Windows of Time program, in which they are now encouraging families. Churches are encouraging families to take four periods of time voluntarily between Take Back Your Time Day, which is October 24th each year, and the end of the year, just to basically spend time with each other, not schedule it, not buying things and sort of stuff, but really to spend time as a family. And there's some great ideas in their materials. I don't have a whole lot of it, but there's some here, but it's all on the Mass Council of Churches website. So I've got, I just want to read one little quote here. This is getting back to what we were talking about with what the Netherlands did. And this quote is from the former prime minister of the Netherlands. And this is the conservative prime minister. He represented the Christian Democratic Party. This was not the socialists in the Netherlands. This is the right-wing party, which was actually very much connected to the Work-Life Adjustment Act as well. And his name is Ruud Lubbers. And what he said is this. It is true that the Dutch are not aiming to maximize gross national product per capita. Rather, we are seeking to attain a high quality of life, a just, participatory, and sustainable society. While the Dutch economy is very efficient per working hour, the number of working hours per citizen are rather limited. We like it that way. Needless to say, there is more room for all those important aspects of our lives that are not part of our jobs, for which we are not paid, and for which there is never enough time. And I would love it to hear a politician from any party, liberal, conservative, or whatever, in the United States, begin to express those kinds of sentiments. Mm-hmm. And I personally would take more seriously their statements that they were for family values, if indeed they began to do those things. So, thank you for this. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about.